please. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-3031. United States of America, Queen Anne
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Morning.
Viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Ms. Inouye and viewing it as true, as the D.C. Circuit has said, this court has to take it, and the district court has to take it when deciding whether a defense instruction is warranted. Ms. Inouye made far more than the minimal showing that's required to get a duress instruction. This circuit has said that the standard, the threshold showing that must be made is fairly low, just some evidence. She presented ample evidence.
Just to make sure we are on the same wavelength, it has to be evidence from which a jury could reasonably find that the defendant, that an ordinary reasonable person in the position of the defendant would have reasonably understood that she had no reasonable legal alternative.
Well, this circuit has never said that.
We haven't said it in so many words, but is there anything that doesn't seem to fit that formulation?
I think if you read the cases, every case cited by both the government and the defense in the briefs, some of the other circuits talk about an objective standard, but what they really apply has to be what they look at, and the Fifth Circuit talked about it in the Willis case. You have to see what the experience is with the person, the background, something that may appear to one person to not be sufficient given the background and the long-standing relationship between the two people, and that has to be a subjective test.
The Willis case that rejects reliance on the battered woman syndrome, right? Which was asserted there in order to give the defendant there a stronger duress defense.
But what I'm saying, when you look at every single case, the Jenneret case and the Gaviria case from this circuit, it's clearly they're putting, the court is viewing it from the circumstance of the defendant, and even the cases cited by the government.
You don't think ordinary reasonable person in the position of the defendant, to be sure, is the test?
Well, I guess the simple answer is if you put an ordinary reasonable person in Ms. Inouye's situation where she's been beat up repeatedly, she described it as
that's clearly got to be accepted.
Beat by a drum, beat like a drum. Whenever she objected and said no, she didn't want to do this, he hit her, beat her up, threatened to kill her.
Do we take account of the fact that also she's been in the country for only 6 years?
Well, I think I think that's part of the test of whether she had a reasonable legal alternative, whether the opportunity to escape, as I think was discussed at trial. Yeah, absolutely, and that's why I say that an objective test doesn't really make any sense, since you have to view her individual circumstances in every case where the duress defense is.
You can have an objective test that takes account of her circumstances.
Well,
can you?
I think that's right in the end, but what it really becomes is you view each individual circumstance and then you have an objective test from the subjective mind of the defendant, it seems to me, or her subjective circumstances, which the court has to accept as true. But I don't think it really matters in this case, because no matter what standard, whether you view objective or subjective standard, Ms. Inouye had been in this country for, at the time of the alleged conspiracy, less than 5 years.
That does seem to me a time in which an awful lot of people would notice that the police are different from the FBI.
Well, there was certainly no evidence at trial of that. The government never asked her what experience she had with law enforcement. They could have asked her, did you ever have any interaction with the police, with the immigration?
She was not an uneducated woman. She's going to nursing school, right?
Yes, which has, of course, two things. That's starting to get into, it seems to me, a very subjective test about her belief in education. But second of all, that has nothing to do with law enforcement, obviously, and no indication she...
No, but it does speak to some ability to perceive what's going on in the community in which she lived.
But what she repeatedly testified to, which I have to accept is true, is she felt she could not report it because he was an FBI. He worked for the FBI. She said, I would be in more trouble if I reported it because he was an FBI agent or worked for the FBI. She said that the FBI works with all law enforcement, and therefore I couldn't... She said repeatedly, that's why I couldn't report it, in addition to the threats and the beatings and the fact that he had total control of her.
What about her... being perfectly able to report it to the Nigerian authorities, but only after she was out of that house? That seemed to me a complete non sequitur.
Well, I think it actually supports her defense quite well. Only after she felt safe. She was out of the house. In that house, she testified that he was the only person who knew where she lived, that even her husband, from whom she was separated, did not know where she lived, that he threatened...
If she left the house, then nobody on earth would know where she lived, right?
Depending... She said he was in total control, essentially, of her, listened in on... had phones to listen in when she was in class. Could she have gone and hidden?
He didn't have the classrooms wired, right?
No, he didn't have them wired.
He had her phone on.
He would make her, as she described it, turn her phone on so he could listen to where she was.
And that's during the 2 weeks in California.
There was no testimony, actually, that she... her lawyer said that during the proffer session, but when she actually testified, she never said he was in California for 2 weeks. She said that he left at one point. She didn't say for how long. She said, I thought he was in California, but I don't know. So there was never actually any testimony that he was in California for 2 weeks during the period of the conspiracy.
Did she give the period of time that she knew he was absent?
No. But even if she did, she gave testimony that he was in control. And that's something that the jury should have been allowed to assess.
Well, it's true that you don't need to have strong evidence to get a jury instruction, it's also true that if the evidence is insufficient as a matter of law to support that duress finding, it's not error for the court not to give the instruction.
That is, of course, correct. But as a matter of law, she testified why she did not think that's totally consistent with the case law, if cases such as Contento, Pashan, and other cases where people give the reason why they feel they could not report. She gave numerous reasons why she felt she could not report it, because he worked for the FBI, because she would be in worse position, which is exactly what the...
As a matter of law, don't you have to have imminent threat for...
Well, imminent threat of...
Arrest?
Imminent threat of is the other prong, imminent danger of bodily harm or serious of death or serious bodily injury. I think that was easily satisfied here. She testified he beat her like a drum whenever she voiced an objection.
How can that be satisfied when there are times when he's not even in the same state with her?
I think if you look at the Merengue case, the district court case from Maine describing battered woman syndrome, while there was no expert testimony in this case, her testimony, they talk about how battered woman syndrome testimony could be relevant to a duress defense to show the total control and show why some person might not, to show a jury why someone might not be able to just walk away or report it. And she said she was terrified of him. She couldn't report it. He would beat her. He had total control of her. That's something the jury ought to be able to decide. Not, I understand Your Honor might be skeptical of that, as it appeared Judge Huvel was, but that's an issue for the jury in the end, because you have to accept the truth of her testimony that the reason she couldn't report it is because she thought she would be worse off. She thought he might carry out with his threat to kill her and bury her in the house and no one would ever know about it. His threat of strangling her, and that nobody would ever find her, his threats, his repeated beatings, and total control over her. That's just what the Merengue case says the jury should be able to hear as expert testimony in that case, admittedly, but there's no reason she can't provide that testimony and let the jury decide. I don't understand why the jury can't decide that, why Judge White taking that away from the jury is consistent with this court's duress case law.
What about the government's suggestion that, you know, she was in school and she could have told someone else other than the police? Well, she could have told a classmate or a teacher.
Again, she did testify that tried to use a friend's phone at school to call the victim, Dr. Iweala, to tell him about it, and he wouldn't listen to her. The government claims she made no attempts, but she in fact testified that she actually tried to call the victim and he wouldn't listen. She testified that she was essentially afraid to tell anybody for the same reasons that she was afraid to tell law enforcement, that he just had she testified that he essentially beat her. She said it was constant that he beat me. It was constant that he threatened me. She used the word always at one point, that there were almost daily beatings, daily threats to kill her, and that she was just terrified to essentially tell anyone about it for fear that he would carry out with his threats of death or that the beatings might get worse, I suppose. And that seems to me to be a classic question for the jury, because you have to accept that testimony is true. And she has provided a reason, as the defendants did in Riff and in Contento Pechon, she's provided a reasonable why she didn't have a legal alternative. She's provided a number of reasons, the beatings, the threats, the fact that he worked for the FBI. And the jury should have been allowed to sort that out instead of the judge cutting it off.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Suzanne Kurt on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, we do believe that it is an objective test. And we also believe that applying that objective test, of course, one can also, as Judge Tatel stated, and I believe you stated as well, Judge Williams, take into account the individual's own circumstances and then apply an objective test. That is, what would a reasonable person do in these particular circumstances? And the test is objective because it is, the requirement is of reasonableness, and that's what this court has at least required, that there be no reasonable alternative. And the cases that we have cited in our brief all apply an objective test based on the fact that it must be a reasonable approach.
The most difficult part of applying that is how you handle a claimed belief, essentially, that all of law enforcement is corrupt and in cahoots and ready to do whatever the bad guy wants them to do.
That is what appellant claimed. I think this court has addressed that particular issue, the in the Gaviria case, when it talked about a very, very similar claim by defendant Naranjo, who claimed that he could not report the drug dealing activity that he claimed to have been forced to engage in because of a live threat to his daughter. And in this case, he claimed that he was denied the duress offense in that circumstance. And this court noted that a mere claim of corruption without more is insufficient.
She hasn't made just a mere claim of corruption. Her testimony is that she believed that her boyfriend was an FBI agent.
Yes, she did say
that. And she told other people that. So we have to accept that as true. And she said she believed that that if she told any law enforcement officer, it would get back to her boyfriend. She's been in the country for 5 years, and that's what she believed. Now, why isn't that exactly the kind of thing that you would allow a jury to assess?
Because, Your Honor, we have to apply a reasonableness test. Yes, she did say that. We all agree she said that. But the question is that reasonable in this circumstance? Would a reasonable person, given her particular circumstances, have believed it was futile?
Would a reasonable person who was being regularly beaten, threatened with death, monitored, and in this country for 5 years believe that? That's the question.
Let's
what's the argument that, how would you write the sentence which says no reasonable person could believe that in her circumstances.
Yes, let's talk about the evidence in this particular case. And I would like to point out to the court that that she did acknowledge that she knew how to contact the police. During her cross-examination, the prosecutor asked her about, you do know what 911 is? Yes, she said yes. And you do know when you call 911 that people can report crimes to the police? And she said yes. So she was familiar as to how to...
Well, but that wasn't her point. Her point was, she didn't say, I don't know how to contact the police. She said, my fear is that if I contact the police, they will tell the boyfriend, and the boyfriend will come beat me up.
Right. Well, I wanted to make the point, contrary to what Mr. Kramer said, that she did at least know how to contact certain authorities. I think he left an impression that she didn't have the wherewithal. She did. But let's talk about her particular circumstances. Yeah. She's in the country for 5 years, but what do we know about her? We know that she has earned an accounting degree in Nigeria, which she said was examined, and it was equivalent to an accounting degree in the United States. She had the wherewithal. She was a married woman with two children. She had the wherewithal to gain a job as a pharmacy assistant. Mm-hmm. She had also worked in a nursing home and in a hospital. And all during the time that this was going on, she was a nursing student at the University of Maryland pursuing a nursing degree.
And what does that tell you about her level of knowledge about the relationship between American law enforcement agencies, particularly post 9/11, when the whole objective is to have them work better together?
This tells us that this is a smart, educated woman who is familiar with the ways of the United States.
Well, isn't that exactly what a jury could conclude?
Well,
let the jury listen to her.
But it
let
has
her be
to
be cross-examined.
But it has
That's
to be a reasonable belief that it would be completely futile to contact the FBI, and she made no solid allegation of corruption. This is
She doesn't have to make an allegation of corruption. Her argument is that if she contacted them, the boyfriend would hear about it. She wasn't saying they're corrupt. She was just saying the information would travel throughout the bureaucracy. He would find out.
But as in Naranjo and in Scott and in other cases we identified, that mere subjective belief is not enough because it is amorphous and it is unsupported.
No, but the question would be, the jury would be looking at it objectively and ask whether that was reasonable, right?
But as Judge Brown noted, the threshold evidence has to be met, and the question is, would
and
a
we've,
reasonable
this court
person,
has said it's low.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We've said it's low.
Yes, it is
in
low.
In fact, the district court said it was low.
She did. She recognized it was low, and she recognized if that person meets the threshold and I don't give the instruction, that's going to be a reversal. She knew that. But nevertheless, she carefully looked at the evidence and found not a scintilla.
What do you think she would have had to say to satisfy your standard?
I think she would have had to state objectively why she believed that reporting him to the FBI
What would that have sounded like?
It would have, maybe she had tried to report it.
That's what she said. She said, I am afraid that if I report this, he'll find out about it and he'll come back and beat me up. What more is she supposed to say?
She didn't state why. I mean, everybody knows that it's common knowledge that the FBI and the police department investigate themselves and that law enforcement agents
investigate what?
Investigate themselves when there are claims of corruption and abuse.
No. She wasn't. So you mean she should have thought, well, okay, if I tell them and he finds out and beats me up, I'll have a remedy against the FBI because that's not very reassuring to her.
There was no indication that she was unable to remove herself from the situation, in which she, in fact, did do.
She thought that her testimony is, now I don't, it doesn't make any difference whether I believe her. Her testimony is, he was beating me regularly, he was monitoring me, and I feared that whenever, if I ever reported it, he would find out and come back and beat me up. That's your theory. I mean, that's what she testified, and don't we have to accept, all that for purposes of this analysis?
But she offered no reason why that was a reasonable belief.
Her reason was, her boyfriend worked for the FBI, and she thought that all these agencies work together.
But the test, Your Honor,
doesn't seem to me to be unreasonable.
Is an absence of a reasonable legal alternative to avoid committing the crime. And she had numerous opportunities
to
get away from this man.
What were they?
We disagree that she did not testify that he was in California during this relationship.
Okay, let's assume you're right. Let's assume you're right about that.
The man was 3,000 miles away.
But his testimony, her testimony was, he's 3,000 miles away, but he's going to find out if I report. He's going to beat me up. Maybe not today because he's in California, but he'll come back and do it.
But that was a completely, this was an educated person who knew that you can seek refuge in many places. Let's talk about the very first day of the very first payment that she elicited from
the doctor. You mean she could just run away?
Yes.
That's what she didn't do.
She could have easily sought refuge with the doctor herself.
With the who?
With the doctor, the very first day.
What doctor?
Dr. Iwella.
She said she told him about it and he didn't believe it.
Well, let's examine the facts of that. That didn't happen until May 10th.
Yeah.
That's after the incident in the parking lot.
If he didn't believe her then, why would he have believed her earlier?
Because at the very first time that she went to collect the bribe payment from him, she was alone all by herself. She admitted that Mr. Asawagu was not with her. There was nothing.
But since we do have her testimony that she tried and he didn't believe her, couldn't a jury conclude based on that, you know, that would have been futile at any time?
She didn't try to report anything to the authorities.
But
she never tried. She
we're going
never
in
made
circles.
An effort.
Okay, we're going in circles.
I've
taken up all your time.
Well,
something else you wanted to cover?
Well, I just wanted to also point out, as there is no evidence of an imminent threat of death or serious
harm. What does imminent mean to you? Did it have to happen that day?
Well, I think imminent is defined in Gen Ret as an immediate threat. If you have a choice, if there's a lapse of time and you have a choice to walk away, that is the definition of not an imminent threat. Uh-huh. And in Posada Reyes, they said it has to be basically an emergency circumstance. And that's appropriate because this instruction is contemplates a situation where you're excusing a crime. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why would we say that? If she really believed that she would be, suppose someone tells you that unless you do something, suppose your family lives in, you live here and your family lives in California, and someone says, you know, unless you pay me this money, we're going to kill your family. And you really believe that, okay? And you don't feel like you can go to the police for some reason. Are you telling me that that's not imminent because someone would have to travel to California?
Courts have found...
Is that right? Is that the answer to my question? It wouldn't be imminent?
In Naranjo, it wasn't imminent. That's exactly what happened.
So imminent has to be basically gun to your head.
It has to be immediate because this is excusing a defendant's participation in an offense.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure I understand why you would draw the line that severely. I mean, why would you do that? If the question is duress, we all agree that duress instructions are appropriate in some circumstances, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we agree with that. Okay, so why would you limit it? I mean, if someone acted under duress, because they really did believe that if they acted in a particular way, they and their family would be beaten up or murdered 2 weeks later, and they couldn't go to the police. If that was all reasonably objective, what difference would it make that it's 2 weeks? Well, I mean, in other words, why would you draw the line? Don't cite a case for me. Just tell me why you would draw the line that way.
Well, it all has to be reasonably objective. I mean,
hypothetical. It took 2 weeks, but there's no doubt that this would have happened to the person.
Well, as Judge Williams pointed out, she had the wherewithal to report it to the...
Now you're not answering my question.
Well, then, but let's look at her whole testimony.
Try one more time.
Okay.
And then I will...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Just explain to me once more why you want the imminence defined so narrowly. I mean, imminence can mean, you know, in terms of the history of the world, imminence could mean 2 weeks, right? It doesn't have to mean day after tomorrow.
Of course, it depends
on... So the question is, why do you want to limit it to immediate now? gun at your head?
Of course, it depends upon the individual circumstances. But immediacy is required, and it is the hallmark, because this is a defense that excuses your participation in a crime, and it must be narrowly defined. That's the reason for this. And she did have the wherewithal to report this to the authorities. I would just like to make one point on that, and then I know my time is up, but she claimed that she called the authorities in Nigeria in June 1st, and then she sent them an email in August. But she stated in her testimony that when she called the authorities in June, she was still living in the house in Baltimore, in which apparently appellant had set her up. And I would point the court to pages 380 and 381 of her testimony, where she explains that. She said she didn't send the email until after she left the house, but she did state that she called the authorities in Nigeria at the time when she was still living in the house in Baltimore. Therefore, between that and her known ability to contact police through 911, I think she did have the ability, and therefore her testimony didn't show that this was a reasonable alternative that she undertook. Unless the court has a question on the venue.
Okay, take 1 minute on venue.
Well, unless...
No, I don't have any questions.
Oh, no,
we don't have any questions. Thank you.
I would like to thank the court very much for its time and ask it to affirm the conviction. Well, thank you.
Does Mr. Kramer have any time left? Mr. Kramer did not have any time. You can take 2 minutes.
I have a question for you that may absorb a bit of that.
2 minutes.
This is before your time starts. Don't start the clock.
Here we seem to be talking not so much about corruption in the police as porousness between parts of American law enforcement. Right? So let's assume corruption is momentarily out of it. Now, at least as the government summarizes Gaviria, the defendant there claims that he can't contact law enforcement, well, it's prison guards, because they're corrupt. And I'm relying entirely on the government's summary. I trust it's correct here. It doesn't work because he offered no concrete evidence to support his corruption assertion. Now, can we not see that as parallel to the absence of evidence that whenever any law enforcement person gets information, it's going to go to this character?
Well,
there's even a serious probability if it's going to that character.
I think the answer is obviously no, and it's. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you, but I think the difference is
why is no evidence needed.
She testifies quite specifically that from my view, I came from Nigeria, where I couldn't even report this violence. She testified specifically.
Although she actually does.
Pardon me?
Although, in fact, she does.
Well, she reported not the violence, but the extortion scheme.
Right, right.
After she felt she was safe, was the word she used. I don't agree with the characterization the government gave to Gaviria, but the simple answer is what she said was the FBI, all law enforcement, and if I report that, he's going to find out about it and carry out the threat to kill me.
But that assumes a set of facts, probabilities, if you will, that as to which there might be evidence and there might not, and no evidence was offered.
Well, you have to accept her testimony is true, how she objectively or subjectively viewed the issue.
But then why in Gaviria didn't we just accept the defendant's testimony? You believed that the prison guards were hopelessly corrupt, and so there was no way out.
Because in Gaviria, the conspiracy, it lasted for 13 months, was the time of the events. And the court said he had ample opportunities to inform his daughter. His daughter was the one who was threatened. He had ample opportunities to inform his daughter, his sister, his own lawyer, his wife's lawyer, or prison officials about the alleged threat. Over the 13 months. That's at page 1531 of Gaviria. So I don't buy the government's characterization of it, first of all. But second of all, I think I'm putting aside whether even if it was the government's characterization, it's correct or not. She provided a concrete reason why she believed that he was in the FBI and that all law enforcement agencies are together, especially the...
What's the concrete reason on the second?
Well, that's her understanding of how it works. That's her.
That isn't a concrete reason. That's a conclusory statement.
Or a reasonable belief. Or a subjective belief. It's certainly those. And that's what, when the government stood up here and said it's subjective, and it's objective, but you have to take into account she's a smart, educated woman, familiar with the ways of the U.S., which there is absolutely no evidence at all in the record.
I understand what you're saying about the government argument, but in a sense, one could simply say it's not unfair to hold her to the standard of an ordinary, reasonable person, which is the standard.
But that's impossible in the sense that the ordinary reasonable person who came here from Nigeria in 2001, who is beaten like a drum, beaten every day. Whenever she objected, she's beaten. She's beaten in the face, the shoulders, the head. She's slapped with a shoe. She's told by him, I will strangle you and kill you in this house and nobody will ever find out. She's told by him that he's an FBI agent. And that she's living in a place where nobody knows. So you have to, would the reasonable person in that situation, is what I guess the simple answer is. So you have to take that situation and what a reasonable person in that situation do. And I hardly think it's far-fetched to say somebody who's being threatened who's being beaten every day and threatened that I'll kill you and nobody will ever know, not to report something and beaten every time she objects to it, not to, and told you an FBI agent to believe that if I report this, he will find out about it. The fact that she knew how to call 911 says nothing about what she viewed it as. I don't think it's unreasonable when somebody, none of these cases were threats by the law enforcement official themselves, who the person reasonably believed was the law enforcement official. So the threat in Gaviria was not by a prison guard. The threat was by people outside. And again, I don't agree with the characterization, but I just ask you to look at pages 393 to 403 of the transcript, where it's clear she never said he was in California for 2 weeks or any period of time. She thought he was at one point, but all that discussion, the vast majority of that discussion, goes back to before the extortion attempt, the extortion events ever started. So
suppose we didn't agree with that reading of the transcript. Does that make any difference to your case?
No, I don't think it makes a difference at all, because she testified, like the court in the district court in Maine and Merengue said, to understand how this works, the jury should be allowed to hear about the total control somebody lives under. You don't need expert testimony to set that out for the jury. She set it out for the jury. She said he had total control of me. The government said he wasn't there at the first when Iweala gave her the first check, but she testified that her phone was sitting right beside her and he was listening in on all the events of that first check, and he did that all the time when she was in class, during the other events, and she was there, and he was there in some of the other events in the case. So I think this total control notion, which is supported in the case law, that even if he was not physically present for some period of time, is again for the jury to decide. I don't understand the problem with letting the jury decide a situation like this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case is submitted.